With the digital economy growing big, understanding the dynamics of product marketing is definitely challenging. Creating a launch plan, adopting different technologies, aligning with global privacy laws, and strengthening customer engagement. Every marketer is powerfully working towards achieving at least one of these. What if these processes could be made a tad easier and simple? That's exactly what we're going to do in today's episode of the podcast. I'm Aishwarya, your host, and today we have Yagneshwar and Ganesh with us. Yag comes with 10 plus years of experience in B2B marketing for MarTech organizations and startups. An international keynote speaker, Forbes Council member, and the best-selling author of 7 books, Yag has also supported several startups, helping them achieve the product market fit and scale up revenue. Welcome to our show, Yag. It's great to be speaking to you today.
Hey, thank you so much, Aishwarya. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you. So yeah, let's go.
All right. So let's start with some basics. You're quite an active person on social media and a podcast host too. Your coffee conversations on LinkedIn is very popular. So what tips do you have for someone who wants to build their personal brand, say on social media platforms, as well as in the community groups around?
Right. So first, I think that it's important to, not try to build a brand too fast or too early. It's important to recognize what your strengths are. And more importantly, when it comes to social media, it's best to focus on one that works best for you than trying to be everywhere. So in other words, it could be looking for the channel that works best for you. For me, it's been LinkedIn. And what happened is I started sharing a lot of point of views and stories on B2B marketing from my experiences. And over a period of time, it started resonating with people. And I got feedback as well. So it is just about matching what you think about yourself or as your strengths. And if your audience also sees it the same way, then you have a match. And if the platform is also helping you resonate with them better, then you have found your ideal fit.
That's nice. That's interesting as well, to have your thoughts match with your audience. So, simply put in a way, I understand it to be first think what your strengths are and then find that specific channel which works for you and go find your audience in that channel.
Absolutely.
That's great. So just a quick question as a follow-up to this. So you say that we are supposed to find the audience in the specific channel that you've chosen. So supposing I'm starting out to have a personal brand for myself or to build a brand for my company, how do I find those audiences on, say, LinkedIn? So I choose LinkedIn as my channel. So what are some simple steps for me to actually go and find these audiences of my choice in whatever channel be it?
Right. I would actually flip the answer to this. First, look at the channel that you choose based on a simple question that if your audience exists there. So for instance, in my case, I was largely selling to a B2B audience or, be it consulting, be it selling my products in terms of MarTech. Everything to me happened there. The relationships were building on LinkedIn. So it was an existing base that I wanted to tap into. So that's what happened. So ideally, I would say for you, if Facebook is where most of your connections are, that's where most of your conversations are happening, then probably that's the best channel for you. And the second thing is don't try to go and hunt for people. Look for people, the ABM way probably, look for those 10, 15 people who connect with you. It's better to have 10 people that support you all out than having a volume of 1,000 people who might not chat with you or who might not engage with you that often.
Fair enough. So ideally find out your smallest, a focus group for your brand and try starting with them and then build your brand from there.
Right. Exactly.
All right. So moving on to one of the common questions for the product enthusiasts. What's the biggest challenge you see in a product or a team for attaining a market fit? And what steps should product marketing leaders take to address this challenge?
Right. So I've often found that it should be a total flip around of the concept in itself. For instance, I don't think it is actually a product market fit. It should be the reverse, market product fit, because we are looking for a market which has a problem, and we are trying to build a product to solve that. So the market and the problem comes first, and the solution that you're building or the product that you're building for that comes second. Only if you take that approach, it's more easier to find a fit. Otherwise, you know, most of the startups, what happens is we get excited about some technology, for instance, AI or blockchain. Then we go about building a product, and then we try to hunt around who could be the possible audience to be using this particular product. But if you go the other way, then it's much, much easier.
So ideally, I love the way you flip the term, you know, the market to product fit, because it totally makes sense. So finally, get that problem statement out and find who you should be addressing and what problem statement you should be addressing, and then go on to build products, which ideally is a way that most startup founders and most of the product people can pick from this podcast.
Yeah, so and another thing is that with most companies, when you build a product and start hunting for the people who have to pick up your products, it becomes more iterative in nature. In sense, like you first look at whether these are the managers who are going to be using this product, or is it the end users who are going to be using this product, or is it the C-suite that's going to be using. So before you achieve your product market fit, it's going to take at least a good 6 to 7 months and a number of iterations. And for all you know, you might actually end up two or three pivots of your products. So the product itself changes over a year, or the first version or the second version. Instead, that's why I always recommend that let's identify what exactly the problem is and then start building.
Yeah. So I think when you know what the problem is, your iterative time is going to be minimal than earlier process. And it's going to end up saving you a lot of effort as well.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that is fair enough. So you always quote that customer engagement is the new marketing. What's the specific reason behind this?
Well, 90% of the time what happens is a customer is usually considered to be the king. And that's the famous marketing quote that everybody uses. But the reality is, you know, once the way we treat this is actually prospects are treated as kings. And once they become customers, they are treated like King Kongs. So that's basically how we tend to look at it. But the reason I say this is also that 90% of the time we forget that there is also a need to market to customers. Once you have a new product version or say an upgrade, a new feature, many of your existing customers don't know that these things exist, and they might not be even using it effectively. So this is where I think the engagement begins from right from the prospect stage, during the onboarding stage of the product, and then the continued relationships. So I look at it as the importance of having your entire team work together as one unit, right from your marketing, sales, then your customer success and your customer support. There is a need for all of these people to work together as one team, and it needs to be seamless. Otherwise, you know, the experience is not so great. And today we are in a space where there are so many products and there is so little time for customers. If not for you, then they are going to look at your competition or somebody else. And the need to switch in today's SaaSified age is so, so easy. You just have to plug out your information, and even GDPR and the CCPA states that people have the right to port all the data from your existing systems and plug out and just import it into the new system that they are adapting into.
Yeah, certainly. This is so true, because I know, being into marketing, I know how much of focus we as marketers have in converting these prospects or leads into customers. And in fact, there is also this well-known quote in marketing, you know, where you say the easiest and the cheap marketing you can do is to your customers to make them buy more, because these are people who have already enforced that trust in your brand, and it's a tad easier to make them stay loyal with your brand, and it's in fact most powerful than getting new people on board. So what you stated is absolutely true. You need customer engagement, and for this you need all avenues of the product, be it the sales or the support or the marketing team or even the design team, the product management team. All of these avenues should come together in supporting the customer. So which means that our efforts to address these customer needs and do as per our engagement with them is crucial.
Right, absolutely true. So if you look at it, your existing customers are generally far more forgiving because there is a relationship established and they are willing to forgive you if there are a couple of honest mistakes here and there. But when it's generally very costlier if you keep switching and always trying to spend more and more money to attract newer prospects all the time.
Exactly. And when you don't have a proper or a clear motive on onboarding these people and taking them through a fixed process of engagement, it's going to go waste in trying to acquire these leads or prospects because you do not know what to do with them as soon as you acquire them. So moving on, in today's digital environment, data orchestration is not only a crucial, but also a tedious process. And we were just talking about these worldwide regulations like GDPR, where there's a lot of enforcement on the product team to properly collect and store the customer's data. So how can marketers leverage the accessibility to data for improved decision making?
Right. So this is one area that I find really fascinating because this is we as marketers are, you know, we have to realize that this is a double-edged sword. We are walking on thin ice with respect to this, because on one side you have privacy and on the other side you have personalization. So with respect to the kind of data that you have, it is extremely interesting and important asset which you can use to personalize the experiences of your customers. For instance, if you know that if an existing customer is coming onto your website, then the kind of your the chatbots, the kind of experience that you can give or the kind of content that you can recommend to those people can be extremely relevant to where they are in the buying cycle and who they are. And if they are one of your prospects, and if you know that they are coming from a specific email, then you can show them relevant content and relevant information and make the engagement far more personalized. So that's one side. On the other side is that you have to be extremely careful with the kind of data that you're handling, because they might have specifically signed up for one or two aspects. And if you are cross-selling and upselling, and if that's not part of the deal that they signed up for, then it can go completely wrong. And secondly, it also happens that even within the same organization, if you're working for different business units, it's important to be absolutely clear on what data is shareable internally to your organization, even when it comes to cross-product. Like, say, you work for a company like Zoho, where there are hundreds of products. For example, they might have signed up for one product, say the Zoho CRM. But if there is one more person reaching out from Zoho Sales IQ, then that might not be actually previously agreed by your customer. So these are kind of things that we need to be extremely careful about.
All right. So yeah, the first one being hyper-personalization. So use the data that you collected in all the relevant means and in through all the relevant techniques. And second is be shrewd enough to know where to use this data, as in use it only for the purpose that you got consent from your customers for, and do not use it for all the other means that you have not conveyed to them.
Right. Precisely.
All right. This is... Yes, this is quite good to know for all the marketers who are listening, because I think this is the age of personalization, and a lot of us are in fact putting data at the backseat when we are going into a lot of these hyper-personalization techniques. So as you stated, it's always important to be very watchful of where we collect this data from and how do we put this data to proper use. So thank you for that point, Yag.
Sure, sure. Yeah, exactly. This has been, these are some of the things that, you know, we learned the hard way. And, you know, GDPR was just up and coming about 2 years ago. And I was part of a company called Find back then. And we had an AI-based product, which we were just starting up. And it was an extremely important phase because the laws were also up and coming, and we had to really know what was happening. And we had to be very sure, because otherwise the fines were huge. And we were a company that was in the first year around about a million and a half in revenue. And GDPR stated that anything that goes wrong, it could cost us about 20% of your annual revenue or 20 million, whichever is higher. So we didn't want to take that risk.
True. I can totally empathize with this, because I am still a product marketer. And back then when GDPR was ratified, I was into product marketing as well. So I remember how much I worked on having a compliance within the product and how much of work we did as marketers to comply with the law and, you know, sort of have all the other things built up around the law.
Right, right. Exactly.
So moving on to our next question, can you break down what MarTech is all about and how the MarTech landscape is changing? This is quite a buzzword now, right? So especially what should startup founders and marketers look forward to in this MarTech space?
Right. So one of the key things that I love to do whenever I talk about anything on LinkedIn or with my, the startups that I mentor and all of these is that make sure that we demystify our buzzwords as much possible and make sure that we put things in the most simplest form of communication. And if you look at it, MarTech is nothing but marketing technology. It relates to every set of tools that goes into your marketing armory. It could be anything from your CRM to email tools to your predictive intelligence tools to your chatbots and everything. So if you look at it, the landscape is growing every year. And if you are one of those people that keeps an eye on the MarTech landscape laid out by Scott Brinker, you would see that there are close to 12,000 products right now. Mm-hmm. And the number of categories is ever increasing. And the problem with all of these is that, as no marketer wants to come into the office every day and log into 10 different tools. And the problem is, even if we start doing that, there are going to be information that are different in different systems. And if the systems are talking to each other and if the flow of information is both ways, sometimes even data, right? So what used to happen in some of the companies in the past I've seen is that there is a sales guy who would say that the revenue that they have clocked for the particular quarter is 5 million. And when you look at the data coming in from the finance system in the company, it would say 2 million. So when you go in and try to analyze why is this disparity, you would understand that salespeople are talking about the accounts closed, whereas the financial people are usually talking about the accounts received. So this is the actual problem that people face on the ground. And it's important to make sure that every system is integrated and we have a single source of data across the company.
Perfect. So having a lot of products in use for marketers these days, it's important that there is a proper data transfer that's happening between these different tools and products. And yes, as you were mentioning, it is also required of a central data point to have a connectivity to all of this data and use them in appropriate places when needed. So marketers definitely will have to think about uniting all of the tools that they use or trying to map around what kind of features or what kind of products they would need in their work and have a sort of good roadmap in the beginning before venturing out to purchase these products or these tools.
Right, exactly. And one of the simplest examples that we can give specifically for marketers is that, say, for example, if you have sent out an email campaign and there are 10 people who have unsubscribed, and if if the other marketer sitting right next to you does not know that these are the 10 people who have unsubscribed and he ends up sending mails to the same set of people, then with GDPR, we are in real trouble.
Exactly. And having a sort of an intra-team discussion on what kind of procedures should be done. Now, as you were just saying, like I sent out an email today and my colleague who would not know is sending out to the same set of people who refuse to receive any more emails from me or from my brand. So yes, having an internal data connectivity tool is important so that this gets reflected. These 10 unsubscribes get reflected in the system so that the next marketer, while reaching out to these people, would need not, have tensions handling the data.
Right, exactly. That's very, very well summarized.
Yeah, thank you. So I have one last question for you today. So we have a lot of product enthusiasts listening to our podcast. So I would love to hear some insights from you on what should anybody look forward to in product marketing as a career. So I am also a product marketer. And this I would like to ask you on behalf of many others who are looking forward to, say, starting a career in product marketing. So what have you got to tell these people?
Right. First and foremost, I would say that I'm not a guru or an expert, but what I can share is something from my experience that I've seen over the last few years. And right now, what's happening is marketing is either divided into one of these divisions within the company. Either you are under the product group or you're under the growth segment, or you're under the revenue segment. So the revenue segment is a group where everybody is focusing on, say, lead gen or customer acquisition, or even the customer success, churn, and all of that. Whereas your growth section is continuously focused on improving your lead generation and cost per click, content syndication, and all of that. Whereas product is all about evangelizing and improving product adoption and you know, generating content around these, and specifically looking at mid-funnel and bottom-funnel content for your existing customers. So as product marketers, it's extremely important to know which part of the funnel you're actually catering to, and improve and manage that area or develop your skills in that particular segment. Because most of the time when we write a blog, for instance, we are just thinking about 10 ways to do something, or you know, how we achieved so much success and improved the ROI by 100%, 140%, things like that. But if you look at it, all of these contents are usually focused on top of the funnel. But it's we tend to ignore the mid-funnel and the bottom-funnel area, which in most cases are supplemented by people who work on the sales enablement zone. So when I say sales enablement zone, these are the people who are you know, typically sending case studies and doing customer competition decks and all of that. So it's important to make sure that you know, we are looking at different parts of the funnel and increasingly are focused and knowledgeable about the area that we are contributing to. We cannot be everything to everyone. We have to be very specific in whom we are reaching out to and the value that we are adding at each stage.
Certainly. So yes, understanding where we belong to and who we are catering to, I think should definitely help a marketer in bringing out the best efforts as possible.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, thank you so much, Yag. It was wonderful to speak to you today, and I personally gained a lot of good points on marketing as well as technology as concerned. And it was great to hear your personal experiences, be it working with a lot of startups or helping them out through with product marketing. And thanks for adding that special flavor on the different avenues that marketing has within a team or within a company, because not many of them get to know that. So thanks for throwing some light on that.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation, and thank you for being so patient with me as well. And you can, I would also like to add one side note as a marketer that guys, whoever are listening to this, I also have a podcast called the ABM Conversations Podcast. So as much you shower your love for the podcast, also give us a listen and let us know what you think.
I'm sure the listeners are going to, you know, go and listen to your podcast as well. So thank you so much for mentioning that.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was lovely speaking to you. And to all these listeners, keep tabs on the broadcast to listen to some interesting product conversations in the more days to come. Thank you.